Money Radio. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to welcome Mark Blythe. He is a political economist, teaches at Brown University, and he is the author of Austerity, The History of a Dangerous Idea, Austerity. Dr. Blythe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be with you.
If austerity is a dangerous idea, why has it come into such widespread use, it seems, and particularly over the past few years?
Because we've had a massive explosion in government debt, so it's quite reasonable to think that there's been a massive amount of overspending relative to revenue. But we have to look at the timeline on this. If your listeners want to go over to a site called Trading Economics, you can generate little graphs, and you can look up US or UK or any budget you want in terms of how much money has been spent, on particularly the rise in government debt. And you know when it starts to go up? 2007, because we had a giant financial crisis where we bailed out the global financial sector and then had a huge recession where tax receipts went down, unemployment and other transfers went up, and we generated a lot of debt. So the response to this is now, oh, well, look at all that spending. We need to cut back. Well, surely the people who generated the debt, namely the financial sector and those who benefit from their assets that got bailed out, should pay that back. But in fact, we seem to be having a conversation about cutting Social Security instead. I think you call that a bait and switch.
I think we do call it a bait and switch. Another area where we seem to have a bait and switch going on is we hear the idea that austerity spurs private investment because government isn't crowding out the market for investment, nor, theoretically, adding to its debt burden. But it seems to miss a key driver there, demand.
Well, absolutely. Think about it in two ways. There's the bottom of the cycle, where everybody's in a recession, the top of the cycle, where everybody's spending money like crazy. Now, if everyone's spending money like crazy, you have full employment, and the government decides to borrow. In principle, then you could have crowding out, because you've got other people that want to use that investment. But at the same time, we live in a globalized world of global investment flows. How can one government, even the United States, crowd out the globe? The Chinese seem all too eager to basically buy all the debt we can issue at less than 2%, in exchange for which we get televisions. I actually think it's a fantastic deal. Now, on the other side, at the bottom of the cycle, if you're in a recession, you'd be an idiot if you were an investor to open up a major factory and employ thousands of people in the middle of a recession. So investment sits on the sidelines. In that case, if government borrows, it cannot by definition be crowding out anything. So obviously these arguments are nonsense. The question then is, why are they so powerful?
Well, that is the next question. Why are they so powerful?
Because it makes a lot of common sense, right? Spend too much, cut back your spending. But it kind of ignores what economists and others call fallacies of composition. What's true about the whole isn't true about the sum of the parts. So think about it this way. Imagine you're in a state that's in a recession, a really deep one, let's say Nevada after the busting of the housing market, and you want a job. So you can price yourself, in theory, at least in economic theory, into a job by taking a wage cut. But if the whole of Nevada takes a wage cut to price itself into a job, what happens to the sales receipts of the businesses where they're working?
Damn.
They go down. You crush consumption. So what's individually rational is collectively disastrous. So we make this analogy between households and firms and states and completely miss the fact that what's true for a household simply isn't true for a state. For example, I don't get to bring people into my family and then tax them over the next five generations to pay the debt I issue in the currency that I own. Countries get to do that. Families don't. And people make these distinctions without thinking about the differences.
Now let's take that same situation, but instead of Nevada and the United States, let's look at Greece and the European Union. Greece has been hit perhaps as hard as almost any nation in the Euro Union, and they're being told, cut back, cut back, cut back even more.
Exactly. They've already lost between 25 and 30% of GDP. So could you imagine if Americans had some outside force coming in and telling them that basically they had to take a third of their income and trash it? And when that had caused untold damage to the rest of the economy, and practically everyone they knew was now either underemployed or underpaid, that the thing to do was to do another 5 years of the same. I really don't think Americans would take too well to that, and obviously neither do Greeks. Now, the tragedy of this whole thing was Greek was a problem, And Greece was a problem insofar as it had a very high budget deficit in 2010. People were worried about the euro breaking up. And so their bond rates went up really, really high. Because they joined the euro, they couldn't do anything such as either inflate or devalue to adjust. So the whole thing had to go on cutting internal demand. And if you want a test case for why austerity doesn't work, look no further than Greece. People say that they haven't reformed. They've done more reforms than the whole of Europe over the prior 20 years put together. And the result has been a smaller economy, which means the same stock of debt gets bigger rather than smaller. Greece's largest increase in debt has happened since they've started tightening, as the economy has shrunk and the same amount of debt has got bigger rather than smaller.
So the ratio of debt to GDP just grows greater and greater and greater. If they continue on this cycle, it seems as if there's no way for them to escape.
That's exactly it. So basically giving them another 6 months of money and liquidity to their banks is more kicking the can down the road rather than any real solution.
And so what is going to be the ultimate resolution for the Greeks?
Well, it's interesting that today there's a little bit of ruminations from Varoufakis, the finance minister, about a referendum. And the last time a Greek leader said anything about a referendum on debt, he was replaced. This is what happened to the government in 2010, I think it was, when they said that they might have to take this to the Greek people. So we'll see if this government's replaced. If it is, it's not clear who will replace them or whether Europe's going to get a better deal. But it could also be a signal that ultimately Greece knows that continuing down this path is simply unsustainable. The mantra coming from Berlin and Brussels, you must pay back your debt, ignores the fact that we have bankruptcy laws for a reason. Some people simply can't pay their debt, so therefore the bondholders have to take a hit. And that hasn't happened. For all the money that's went to Greece, $240 billion, only about $40 billion of that ever made it to Greece. The rest of it went straight back to the core banks because they were the ones who would do the interest payments.
It's such an interesting situation going on in Greece. Dr. Blythe, I'd love to talk with you again. Unfortunately, we're out of time. The book, Austerity, The History of a Dangerous Idea, by Dr. Mark Blythe. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you again.